So good evening, everyone, on this New Year's Eve, a time when we perhaps do something a little different than what we're doing here now, a time when we often make resolutions for the next year. It's a common practice in this culture, at least, to make a New Year's resolution, which often is a self-improvement project, something we want to improve in ourselves, something we should do, something we shouldn't do, lots of shoulds and shouldn't. Musts. It's one, I forget the name of the psychologist that called it masturbation. The tyranny of shoulds is another psychologist whose name I also can't remember. Remember the quotes, it's not the psychologist. But they're pointing to something very powerful, in that the way we examine our lives is this kind of self-critical lens, and we make it into a self, our lives into a self and ongoing self improvement project. We often, when we did have bookstores and we'd go into bookstores, you'd see the self improvement section was often quite large, and people wanting this aspect of self improvement. So we're going to explore letting go, particularly of the past, a way to approach that, and perhaps a new way of setting intentions for the new year, a process of touching into our wise aspirations, deepest aspirations. Let's start with a poem called The Ceaseless Flow of Endless Time by John Andrew Story. The ceaseless flow of endless time no one can check or stay. We'll view the past with nor regret, nor future with dismay. The present slips into the past and dreamlike melts away. The breaking of tomorrow's dawn begins anew today. The past and future ever meet in the eternal now to make each day a thing complete shall be our New Year's vow. Pointing to the importance of the eternal now, the power of now, as Eckhart Tolle refers to it, and the present moment. The past and future meet in the present moment. So we're going to do a present moment reflection and exercise about the past and the future. So the present moment is this, the universe really gifts us this present moment where we can leave behind what no longer serves us and cross over into a new illuminating, transformative path. So letting go of the past, there can be real transformation for us in the new year. In January, the month January is named after the Roman god Janus, J-A-N-U-S, who is the god of beginnings and transitions. It's pictured, I believe, as having two faces, one looking to the past, one looking to the future. The idea of this period of new beginnings and new endings. It's the time of the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year, is pretty close to this time of December 23rd or something. And then we transition into more light and more light as the year progresses. So it's this time where we can reflect on transitions and new beginnings in our life. Of course, that's all perception. Let's add that in there. It's just like any other day, really. We've just created a perception of it being somehow different. It's just another moment in now. So, but I think to make something helpful, constructive out of this notion that is kind of culturally embedded in our perceptions of a new year and celebrating a new year. Why not? I'll use anything I can to get the practice across, and why not New Year's? Even though it is, as I said, just perceptions. T.S. Eliot, a poet I love, in a Little Gilding, which if you have the whole poem is beautiful. Should have increased the font on this. Let me see if I can see it. I might have to get somebody else to hold it. My arms aren't long enough. For last year's words belong to last year's language, and next year's words await another voice. And to make an end is to make a new beginning. To make an end is to make a new beginning. So no one can go back and start a new beginning. T.S. Eliot is pointing to there, but anyone can start today and make a new ending. We can begin in this moment, right where we are now, to transform our lives. And I think really, the fact that you're here, that's huge. So many other places you could be on New Year's Eve. So, kind of dwell in that. That aspiration that brought you here on New Year's Eve. Really reflect on that. That deep aspiration you have for goodness, for truth. Marinate in it. So I'd like to talk a bit about the processes of letting go, releasing, and of setting intentions. I've used the word letting go quite often so far in this retreat, and we had some questions about it and question and answer period. In so many words, what is this letting go? And why let go? What are we letting go of? And how do we do it? Those kinds of questions. I'll begin with a story. I went to India to practice for some time with a Bhagawan, a teacher, and we were in a place where it was known to be quite quiet, because India can be quite busy and noisy and so forth. If you've ever tried to go to meditate at Bodh Gaya, the place where the Buddha attained enlightenment, it's a pretty busy place. There's people selling things through loudspeakers and so forth. It may not be your image of the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, but that's what's there. But this was supposed to be advertised as a quiet place, and it usually was a quiet place to retreat. It was on a turtle beach, it was called, and there were no hotels or anything, restaurants allowed on this beach, because it's where the turtles nested, so it was a protected area. So the only thing was this ashram retreat center. So we arrive and we sit for our first meditation, and Almost on cue, the guy selling his wares had through his, you know, like a, it's like a megaphone. So it's not like a speaker like this, but more like a one of those things you hold, but it's attached somehow to a mic. Anyway, with amplifiers and everything. He was just going about, you know, selling. And he'd begin by saying, hello, hello, in English, and then it'd go off in Hindi for a while, very, very loud, and go over and over and over. And when he'd finish, of course, he would take a breath, and then he would just start right over again. Because, of course, the people that didn't hear it, had walked by, would there'd be new people. So it would just be this repetition over and over, very loudly, in a mixture of Hindi and English, selling his wares. So all kinds of things go on in your mind. You're there for a long retreat. You've got, 6 more weeks of this. That's 327 meditation sessions. That's 192,000 minutes of, you're calculating all this and trying to figure out whether you could actually survive this or not. Certain thoughts of, sneaking out maybe and sabotaging the loudspeaker equipment come to mind. Maybe taking a collection and getting people to buy all this stuff so then he has to go home. All these, kinds of anything but this repetition of, hello, hello, come and buy my wares. Now that's pointing to letting go. The mind was just hanging on to this and dwelling on it. And over days, of course, it begins to wear down. This is what's happening. This is what is. This is the environment that we're practicing in. And at some point, it occurred to me to practice mindfulness of what was arising. And maybe the problem wasn't the fella with the loudspeaker. Maybe that's not the problem here. Maybe my mind is making a problem out of it. So that began to occur. So there was a process of letting go, really a wearing down. And eventually letting go. And eventually it was just seen as sound. So letting go of the story about the sound. I mean, that was the only solution to this was to surrender, to let go and relax. Because it wasn't any thoughts of it going away or sabotaging it, weren't viable solutions. So just surrendering and relaxing into it and realizing that it's the story about the sound that was causing suffering. The sound itself is just sound. It's the story. It shouldn't be there because and da-da-da-da and shouldn't be this loud because and da-da. So it's just story and story upon story about it. And letting go of that story, it ceased to be a problem. It was just sound. In fact, it became a little bit humorous that this would go on for so long. The stamina of the guy. I have to respect the stamina of somebody. To just go on and on like that. I still have to let it go a little. It's a great teaching, though. So we didn't have to destroy his sound system to be happy. We just needed to be okay with it. It just became sound. Let go of the story. Just be with the sound as sound. Be with whatever arises. In fact, after a while, I hardly heard the sound. It went to the background. We talked about the foreground and the background. It started to kind of fade into the background. So it's a great teaching. Ajahn Chah, a great Thai forest teacher, Vipassana teacher, taught many Western students Thai forest. They really believed in intense meditation in huts in the forest. So you'd get your own little kuti or hut, and you'd stay in that hut and meditate for fairly long periods of time in seclusion. That's what the tradition of Thai forest and Ajahn Chah. He said, one of his more famous quotes, if you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you'll have complete peace. Very simple quote, but really kind of sums it up. And that's kind of the process that we go through. We let go a little, see a little peace. And in that moment on the retreat in India, started to see the peace, a little bit of peace coming in. Let go a lot more peace coming in. As the Buddha put it, learn to let go. This is the secret of happiness. I don't get any more succinct than that. Learn to let go. This is the secret of happiness. So it's important for us to look back through the year and look at what are we holding on to? What are we not letting go of? Where are we stuck? It's important to look back at that. And if New Year's provides us a ceremonial opportunity to do that, then let's take advantage of it. What's keeping me from seeing or returning to the truth moment by moment? And how do I let go and step in the direction of my heart's longing? So what are you looking at? What are you holding on to? How are you relating to your life? What can be let go of? Martin Batchelor, Stephen Batchelor's partner and wonderful Dharma teacher, talks about letting go in stages. We can let go after something occurs, after an event or an experience. We can let go during the event or experience. We can let go at the beginning of the event or experience, or we can let go before it even happens. So you start to see the triggers of what's happening. So really look, what can you let go of at this moment? And it's not about making things disappear. You should probably get that clarified at the outset. Not about making things disappear. Letting go is not or something I can demonstrate this with, Mary. So for holding on, that in the image of the hand holding on to something, and letting go, if we want to let go of this, it's not one image is to let go would be to. I'm never going to get that back now. To toss it. Thank you very much. It usually doesn't roll that far away. But you get the idea. It's not a getting rid of or a tossing aside, wanting it to go away. That's not what we're talking about when we say letting go. Actually, a more accurate phrase may be letting be. Just letting it be. So it can be this kind of letting go. just an opening to it and allowing it. So letting be, like the Beatles song. Don't worry, I won't sing it. I have before, but I won't. Let it be. No, I'm sorry. So it really is this letting be, letting it be. We're not trying to annihilate it, or throw it away. It's more like a settling down and a letting be. And you can see the difference. Say one's has a resistance, don't want it kind of flavor to it, and the other has a more of an opening and allowing flavor to it. So it's part of it's a letting go of the resistance to what is. Letting go of that resistance to what is moment by moment. Really, in some ways, teaching the Dharma is finding 101 different ways to say, be with what is. All right? I don't know if you've noticed it. It's kind of the theme that it's really simple. This is so simple, this practice. It's just being with what is moment by moment. Allowing what is moment by moment. Really simple, but not so easy to do. It takes practice because of our mental habits and proclivity to go on autopilot in our lives and so forth. So, aligning with what is. And being with and aligning and allowing what is doesn't mean it's passive resignation. That's often a question that arises for people. Does this mean I just become, a doormat? People mistreat me and I just, allow it. No, it's not about passive resignation. In fact, it's about being allowing and seeing what's arising in that moment. And seeing that new possibilities, new options can arise. So when I'll continue with, somebody mistreating you. Our reaction may be to lash out and lash back at the other person. Our immediate reaction. By allowing it and really being with the experience, what's happening here with me in the body, the thoughts are arising, a bit of a pause happens. First thing that happens when you're mindful in that way is a pause happens. And in that moment, in that pause, opens up a whole a whole range of other possibilities. So it's kind of a response as opposed to a reaction, a mindfully mediated response, you could say. As opposed to an automatic reaction. So it's being with what is, but not then acting in ways that are appropriate. So when I say that phrase and we hear that phrase, sometimes that's what comes up for people, particularly if they're newer to the practice. Is wow, is that. Does that mean I just put up with everything? But no, it really doesn't. It frees you up. It leaves space in that pause for other options to emerge, to arise as possibilities in that pause. A very powerful little pause that can change your life. change the world. That little pause, so powerful. There's a quote that I almost remember, but I don't remember enough of it to say it. I'm going to look it up. It talks about the power of that pause, that moment of pause. So this practice is not about analyzing and endlessly making more of a problem out of things, but of practicing the state of leaving things alone for the most part. Letting things arise and be. Noticing the story, noticing what arises with it. In the Dhammapada, chapter 24, it says, let go of the past, let go of the future, let go of the present, and cross over to the farther shore of existence. Again, really pointing to this, the importance of letting go. Basically, it's the secret of happiness. It's pointing to nirvana there, to freedom, the further shore of existence, letting go of the past. So can we let go of the past? And can we notice when we're not letting go of the past? Just as important. Letting go. So if you're in your sitting, what's arising is remorse about the past. Replaying a conversation you had with somebody, or a fight you had with somebody, or something you wish you'd had have said, or whatever it might be. And this is coming up again and again and again in your meditation. We notice that. We notice, here's one of those top 10 tunes that keep coming up in our practice. Notice it again and again. And that's what the letting go is. That's the releasing into it, the letting go. Just noticing. And the letting go of the future, which has not happened, so it's just an imaginary future at this point, so it's clearly in thought. So is the past, actually. It's just thought. The future we sort of get. Yeah, that's just a thought because it hasn't happened. So, but the past is just a thought. It never happened. It's just a thought about what you think happened. Likely based on incomplete information, and you don't know what the other person was thinking. If you really had all the data, you might be able to, but you don't. So it is just a thought, an incomplete thought. Can we let go of our worries about the future in the same way? Just noticing them as just thoughts arising in the mind. Now the letting go of the present moment. Wow, what's that? I thought we were supposed to be in the present moment. Non-judgmentally paying attention and all that. So now I'm saying, the Buddha's saying let go of the present. Basically not dwelling on the present. We can become fixated on the present moment. It's not becoming fixated on anything. Allowing everything. Like, what's this present moment? Better be a good one. So allowing the present moment, whatever arises moment by moment. So that's what's being pointed to here, is this allowing in the present moment. Allowing the difficulties that are arising in the present moment. Allowing the joys that are arising in the present moment. I think I've said this before here at some point, but that the difficulties, our difficulties are the path. So in some ways there are opportunities to practice. In all ways, actually. There are opportunities to practice. You can't learn to let go in paradise. Nothing to let go of. And being human has, you know, difficulties. 10,000 joys, 10,000 sorrows. Part of the human condition. So that's the grist for the mill, is that the phrase? Grist for the mill for our practice. Are these difficulties. And if we're not grasping, there's no need, there's nothing to let go of. There's no need for letting go if there's no grasping. So it's really pointing towards where we're clinging, where we're grasping in our lives, where we let go. I'd like to read a poem by Thich Nhat Hanh, one of my early teachers. There we go. Called Letting Go. Letting go gives us freedom, and freedom is the only condition for happiness. If in our heart we still cling to anything, anger, anxiety, or possessions, we cannot be free. Letting go gives us freedom, and freedom is the only condition for happiness. So I'm going to talk a little more about the letting go, the letting go after. Well, should I talk? What am I doing for time? Because Martin Batchelor talks about you know, letting go during, before, and so forth. The letting go after is, you know, kind of learning from experience. So you in an immediate sense, it's you've reacted, and you're looking at the suffering that resulted, and you're learning, this is what happens when this kind of reaction occurs, and it could just be all internal. There was a time back several decades when driving in the car with my wife, she would get lost a lot. It was before GPSs and the smartphones and all that, right? Now you just listen to a machine and they tell you where. These days you'd have to get big maps out and plan where you were going and so forth, or know where you were going. She would get lost, and it would have this reaction. It would arise, and I'd get really grumpy. It would change my mood. Just a little thing like being lost. It's not even like we're late or anything. We're just lost. Eventually we'll get there. We always do, right? So I did that a few times, and I started to notice, this is causing suffering. This reaction to what's occurring is causing suffering. I was able to then see that suffering and learn from it the next time. So that's letting go after. So I saw the reaction, I saw the suffering, and I could learn from it and perhaps notice it sooner the next time and let go before it arose, start to see the triggers. That's letting go after. But we can also let go in terms of immediate experience. We can also let go after in terms of our letting go of things that in our past that aren't serving us any longer in our practice. We can let go of anger, bitterness, past relationships, stress, perceived wrongdoings that we've done or that have been done to us, perceived bad choices that we believe we've made, the ex, let go of that, the ex-partner or ex-boss. So those are the more global things that we can practice letting go. How is this serving me in my practice by hanging on to this? It's not always easy to let go. Why is it difficult to let go of these things? Sometimes we've built the store. We're so embedded in the story that we get an identity from that story of the ex-boss or the ex or the past relationship or perceived wrongdoing. There's a conflict there with the status quo. It's really upheaving the status quo. It can also conflict with some fairly compelling stories that we've developed over the years, or the year that we're right and reasonable and logical, and they're wrong and unreasonable. Letting go of it might conflict with that storyline that you've become very embedded in. So it can really conflict with identities that we've constructed. So it can be difficult to let go. One of my favorite poems by Anna Murwood, called Dropping the Banana. So there's sometimes a story told, maybe not so much these days because it's not kind to monkeys, but if you've heard the story, the monkey and the banana. So in the old days, we'll say it was in the past, to capture a monkey, they would take a coconut. I think eventually they were using plastic Coke bottles, but a coconut, and they would cut a hole in it and put a banana inside it and hang it in a tree. And the monkey would put their hand in the hole and grab hold of the banana. And they were trapped. They wanted that banana. They're grasping onto that, and they wanted that banana so bad, but they couldn't get their hand out of the hole while they were grasping the banana. The only way to be free was to release that banana, and then they could just pull their hand right back out. But they wouldn't. They would just sit there with their, right until the point where there'd be a net put over them and they'd be captured. Now that's grasping and holding on to the banana. So I'm thinking that's perhaps where Anna got the title for the poem, Dropping the Banana. At least that's what the story I've created in my mind. So dropping the banana. Dropping the banana, all I have to do is let it go. Like a falcon releasing a rabbit, like an athlete relinquishing a golden dream, like a hungry child tossing a ripe mango into the sun. All I have to do, I dread. What happens if I can't let go? What happens if I can? Surely it is safer not to experiment, for see here, I am not alone. At the office, by the pool, I recognize you, fellow monkeys, clinging to the thresholds of normalcy. rattling imprisoned limbs you dare me to desert. All I have to do, I do. Finger by finger, I loosen my grip. There was no banana, only a fist, contorted with fear, choking the innocent air. There was no banana, only a fist, contorted with fear, choking the innocent air. So she's pointing to the difficulties of letting go. Our perceptions. Letting go of our stories can be difficult. And you've seen that in your practice. These stories, they come up again and again and again. And just when you think you've seen the last of some of the top 10 tunes, the new hit parade comes out. Justin Bieber puts out a new album. There's three songs. So something new happens in your life, and there's some new stories that are arising. And this letting go can also involve often involves some forgiveness. Forgiveness of yourself and forgiveness of others. And this can be challenging. So part of letting go, I think, is practicing forgiveness. So how do we let go? Well, we notice what's arising moment by moment. And with investigation, we can notice that what's arising is conditional, based on causes and conditions, and it's non-personal. It's selfless. It's a thought. And they can be left as they are. And by leaving them as they are, we create room for something else to enter. I'm saying leaving things as they are and not getting rid of. And this can require a fairly strong practice, strong meditation, strong mindfulness. So I can use that phrase, practiced mindfulness, in order to see the subtle nature of this. This clinging can be very subtle. The things we're clinging to can be very subtle. It's easier to see gross emotions like anger and fear. You see those, you experience them. You get down into some of the subtler forms of clinging and desire, and they can be very subtle, and that's part why our meditation practice is so helpful in seeing them, because we have a situation where the mind is allowed to settle. There's a sense of concentration, mindfulness, and things can be seen in that environment. We can go with the natural flow of things. So letting go is ultimately, I guess you could say, about non-attachment. Realizing the truth of the I, me, and mine. I think this is the Buddha was asked to comment in 30 seconds or less what he's been teaching for 45 years. It's kind of like, you know, the journalist came up with what have you been teaching for the last 45 years? And we've only got 10 seconds, go. And so this is what he said to that journalist. Cling to nothing whatsoever as I, me, or mine. So if you want one teaching, that's the soundbite that he was actually asked to, if he could, in so many words, to summarize what he's been teaching. Cling to nothing whatsoever as I, me, or mine. As we cling to our stories about I. So he's letting, there's also another way of saying that is let go of the opposite of clinging is perhaps the letting go of I, me, or mine. We do a lot of I, me, or mining in our lives. Our lives can be a story about me, starring me, produced by me, written by me. It's all about me. I can remember when I'd walk into a room and I think, oh, that person's thinking this about me, and that person's thinking that about me, and I think that person's thinking this about me. And the reality is, nobody even noticed that I walked into the room. I mean, really. But we create this me-centered world. We're kind of wired in a way to do that for our survival, for one. I mean, just so there's beneficial aspects to being aware of I, me, and mind. But there's also aspects of it that cause suffering. So kind of getting away from the I as the center of the universe, to put it one way. To take it much further is to realizing that there is no inherent self. That everything that is happening is an arising, a confluence of causes and conditions, just arising in that moment. I've taken it a step further. I may get puzzled looks from some. You know, the three characteristics of existence that the Buddha said was, you know, suffering. Suffering is part of being human. And the second one is impermanence. You know, everything's changing moment by moment. Nothing is permanent and stable. And the third one is not self. It's all happening and it's all selflessly arising based on causes and conditions. So for a long time I thought, yeah, I got the first two I get. It's kind of that third one though. Maybe the Buddha got it wrong. I don't know. I'm not really seeing this one. But I'll give it some time. So it is the one that sometimes people say, wow, I'm here, aren't I? Like, pinch myself. And so I'm not denying that that reality, that relative reality of the body here. But ultimately, there's no inherent self. So that's kind of a continuum of looking at that notion of letting go of and realizing the truth of I, me, or mine, or not clinging to anything as I, me, or mine. So letting go is ultimately about that, about this non-attachment, non-identification of anything that's arising as being self-driven, controlled by a permanent, enduring, inherent self. There's a lot of freedom in seeing that too. You may think, oh, that sounds scary, letting go of all that, but there's a real freedom in it's just arising moment by moment. There's a difficulty that arises. That's just a confluence of causes and conditions. In this moment, that's what it is. It's not like me with the controls, like it's not like a computer game where I'm on the screen and I'm moving about. You can see this perhaps in practice terms. You can see this concretely in looking at the arising of intention for an action. So if you really want to, you know, play with this notion of is yourself in control of your life, look at the arising of intention. Because if you're in control of it, you should have some pretty good control over intention. Because intention is what precedes action. So see if you have control over the arising of intention. Even what's arising right now with regards to what I'm saying. Do you have any? Are you controlling that? Or is it just arising? It's just thoughts popping up. Oh, he's full of... makes no sense. Or, you know, wow, that makes a lot. I can see that. Or, you know, whatever is arising. Boredom. Whatever. Noticing if you're in control of that. Okay. So letting go, that's everything you wanted to know about letting go, maybe more. I'll move on to intentions for the new year. I talked about some of the, how we often approach the new year and setting our of often unattainable self-improvement projects. Christmas for people that own fitness studios is actually January, because that's when everybody comes in and signs up for new year-long fitness plans, and then rarely do they come to fruition. Best laid plans. And then, of course, we can beat ourselves up for, set this New Year's resolution, and then getting tangled even more in self-criticism. And they're often phrased as things I should do or I shouldn't do, and set as kind of ultimatums. I'm not going to do this anymore. We've all done this. I mean, not just on New Year's, right? I'm going to stop doing X. Of course, as soon as you do that, first chance you get, you do X, right? It seems. Now, that can be the process at any rate. Perhaps you've made a New Year's resolution to never make a New Year's resolution again. And you're not alone if you've done that. They often lead to self-loathing and discouragement in the process. And they often come from a place of aversion. Not something we don't like about ourselves. Or perhaps they're based on greed. I'd be happy only if I had, you know, $1 million. Well, maybe I would, actually. Forget that one. No, I'm just kidding. But, so based on this greed, I'd be happy if only I had. Whatever it might be. So either based on aversion or greed, they often come from one of those places. So we can look at setting intentions as something different than setting goals. Well, I went over time. Wow, time flies when you're giving a talk. So envisioning a future outcome is generally a goal, which, you know, involves planning and discipline, working to achieve it. An intention is more a path or a practice that is focused on being in the present moment, based on an understanding of what matters to you most and making a commitment to align your worldly actions with those inner values. So it provides meaning in a larger context. So really you're looking at what is your heart's deepest intention. So it's kind of a felt wisdom, listening intuitively. And we'll go through a little exercise, a short one later to look at that. Listening deeply. The rational mind is unable to provide clear intention, and is often in this confusing world. So it's kind of listening from a different place to what's most important to you. Aligning with the deepest part of yourself. So we will have a short period of sitting or walking or standing meditation. Then we will, at 8:30, we'll be having a special New Year's snack. And then we're going to move at 9 o'clock to the fireplace room, but it's set up so that we can all sit in there and enjoy a very short reflection, meditation, and a bit of a way of welcoming in New Year's. So we'll pretend it's New Year's, but it's really only 9 o'clock to 9:30. If we did this at midnight, half of us might be asleep by then. So enjoy. So till 8:30, enjoy some period of practice, walking meditation or standing meditation. Oh, and you can bring. There aren't enough chairs and couches in the fireplace room for all of our seats. So some of us might want to bring just the round cushion, the Zafu. I don't think there'll be room if we bring the big. We'll be cozy in there. It's tight on space, but it's a nice space with the fire going. And so some of you, if you don't mind sitting on the floor on your cushion, that would be appreciated.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.